This is Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorek. And we begin today in Connecticut with a narrow ruling from the state's Supreme Court in a lawsuit challenging federally granted immunity to gun manufacturers. In a 4-3 decision, the court ruled to reinstate a lawsuit against the gun manufacturer Remington, filed by families of victims of the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting. If Remington loses the suit, it would be a landmark ruling that would deal a huge blow to the gun industry. Here's lawyer for the families, Josh Koskoff, at a press conference just this afternoon in Bridgeport.
Nobody is above the law. Even a gun company that is powerful, even a gun industry that is politically connected, even in the face of some statutory protections, no industry is fully above the law.
And joining us now from Westport, Connecticut, is New England News Collaborative reporter Cassandra Bassler. She's a senior editor at NPR station WSHU. Cassandra, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, if you can remind everybody, what is this case all about?
Sure. What this case focused on was nine families of victims who were in the Sandy Hook school shooting back in 2012 filed a lawsuit, as well as one survivor, saying that the way that this Remington Arms Company manufactured the rifle that was used in the shooting and the way that they marketed that gun was in violation of consumer protection law. They basically said that this company manufactured a gun that was originally designed to be used as a military-style weapon, and their argument was that they shouldn't be selling that kind of weapon to members of the public. And basically the court said, let's let the Connecticut courts settle that, so the lawsuit's moving forward.
Okay, so the lawsuit will move forward. Can you tell us a little bit about the implications of that decision?
Sure. It's the furthest lawsuit with a gun manufacturer it's the furthest a lawsuit has ever moved forward with a gun manufacturer since Congress passed a law in 2005 that basically broadly protects gun makers from being sued. So people across the country have been looking at this lawsuit saying this could be a landmark case. Notably absent from the conversation today is Remington's lawyers. They haven't really made any comment, but a lot of people expect that they will take this to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so you're not hearing from Remington. Are you hearing from the families or their lawyers?
Yes, the family's lawyers have spoken out. They just had a press conference today. And they're, of course, very happy because all they've really wanted is to have their day in court. They wanted to have these questions about how these guns were marketed to somebody like the shooter in the Sandy Hook shooting. And the only way they can really see a way to do that is to request documents that can be presented as evidence in court. And this is the first step to getting those internal marketing documents and things that will sort of show where the thinking is in marketing AR-15 style rifles to the public.
Yeah, I think happy obviously is a relative term when you're talking about a tragedy like this. We actually have some sound of Ian Hockley. He's the father of one of the victims, Dylan, who was age 6 in 2012. Here's Ian speaking at that Bridgeport press conference from earlier.
I can't say I'm excited by this ruling. I wish it was never here. But what we've said from the outset is, all we want is our day in court, for the law to be upheld, and for a jury to decide our case.
All right, so to that point, their day in court, this case has been kind of snaking its way through the legal system for years, started in 2014. Can you tell us what's going to happen next in this case?
Sure. Well, I haven't actually heard from both sides saying where it's going to proceed, but the expectation is that this will land before a jury. The plaintiffs will be able to ask for documents from Remington, like I mentioned, talking about sort of how they were thinking about marketing and advertising these guns. The way this court case came about was one of the mothers of the victims was sort of trying to make sense of how this tragedy had happened, and she realized that there are advertisements that Remington put out saying things like, get your man card reissued and advertising their guns. And they really thought that it's sort of targeting this demographic of people trying to motivate themselves to make violent acts against other people. And so this is really just another way of making sense of, you know, was that the intention behind the marketing tactic?
Yeah, and obviously a lot further to go on this case. That's New England News Collaborative's Cassandra Bassler, reporter and senior editor at the NPR station WSHU in Westport, Connecticut. Cassandra, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
For more on what this case means in the legal world, we turn now to Nancy Gertner. She's a former federal judge and a senior lecturer at Harvard Law and WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So let's start with your initial reaction to this ruling. Are you surprised?
Well, I'm very surprised that in 2005, when Congress passed a law that was essentially immunizing gun manufacturers from a whole host of civil actions in the various states. I mean, literally, the statute begins with the Second Amendment protects the right to bear arms. There were very narrow exclusions. And to my knowledge, no other court has found a civil action that met that exclusion. There was very, very narrow exclusions. And the one exclusion was that when the manufacturer or seller of a product knowingly violated a state or a federal statute with respect to the marketing of the product and the violation caused the harm, then it can be the basis for a suit. But this exception, what is very, very narrow, intentionally very narrowly drawn, and to my knowledge has never succeeded in allowing a lawsuit to proceed.
So obviously that makes a tough climb then for the families. Connecticut does have a state law, the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act. What's the legal argument that they're trying to make with using state law?
Well, it's an extraordinary argument, and it's to some degree limited to this particular, to the gun that was used in the Sandy Hook shooting, which is to say a gun of such considerable lethality, a gun that is so clearly intended for military use, was marketed then for civilian use. But there is simply no appropriate civilian use for anything that is as lethal as this weapon is. And so it's essentially, you know, it's an unfair marketing approach, which is extraordinary. They couldn't claim that the gun was wrongly in the hands of the shooter because the gun had been purchased by his mother, as you may recall. And so all of the usual debates about, you know, did the gun get in the hands of a mentally disabled person or something like that don't apply here. So this is really more broadly that they are marketing an extraordinarily lethal weapon for civilian use when there really is no appropriate civilian use whatsoever for the gun.
So that's the that's meeting the state law that they're trying to use there. There's also an exception. You mentioned there are a few exceptions to the 2005 federal law protecting gun manufacturers. Negligent entrustment. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and how that
factors? Negligent entrustment is where is what I was just describing, which is to say that someone had negligently put this gun in the hands of a third party when they shouldn't have. And the difficulty here is on the facts of this case, Adam Lanza's mother, Nancy Lanza, is dead, and no one knows the circumstances of the under which he got his hands on it. So it really was a difficult claim to make. So the unfair marketing issue is a much more interesting one, and that potentially opens the door to other similar lawsuits across the country. Massachusetts has a consumer protection statute. The Attorney General, for example, could consider, there are lots of pitfalls on this road, but could consider bringing such an action as well. Again, this is a uniquely lethal weapon that is described as so lethal that the speed of the bullet creates its own wounds. Even if it doesn't land appropriately in a, you know, a delicate area, the shockwave from the bullet can be lethal. The amount of bullets that it produces is obviously lethal. And what they're saying is there's a mismatch between the purpose of this weapon, what it was intended to be used for, and civilian marketing.
So the lawsuit will now proceed based on this ruling. That will include a discovery process, which could reveal some internal communications at Remington. What sort of legal implications could that have?
Well, consider the tobacco litigation, for example. I mean, the tobacco litigation opened the door to troves of documents that enabled people to look at how much tobacco manufacturers knew and when they knew it about the danger of the substance. Nobody's ever been able to do that now because of the extraordinary breadth of the federal law and the limited nature of the exception. There's no question, however, that before you get to discovery or the rest of this lawsuit, the defendants are going to take this to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court it was going to have squarely before it what's the breadth of the immunity for gun manufacturers on the one hand, and what's the meaning of this exception.
Yeah,
it would be a very, very controversial decision.
Yeah, I'm hoping you can just, one final question, give us a little bit of an idea of the scope of this case here. On the one hand, a lawyer for the gun manufacturer says there's no case law on advertising being declared a cause of death, talked about how misleading advertising has usually been what's been gone after under these rules in the past, not targeting specific populations. The NRA is saying that this could eliminate legal protections for gun companies. What's this mean for us in Massachusetts, the country at large, as we watch this case unfold?
One question.
I know. I'm sorry.
So first it's going to go to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is going to say, did the Connecticut court interpret a federal statute appropriately? Is it appropriate for this to go forward? Then if it goes forward in Connecticut, there are still many pitfalls, which is they have to show a knowing violation. They have to show that the violation was a proximate cause of the harm. There are lots of steps here that they would have to ultimately prove in order to succeed. Around the country, different states have different language in their consumer protection laws. Massachusetts has a very broad one, largely empowers the attorney general to go after this. The product was defective. The car didn't drive. It was deceptive because it marketed to civilians when it was a military weapon.
Yeah.
So every state will have to look at its own consumer protection laws and see whether it fits within these exceptions as well. That door had never been opened before.
Long way to go on the story, obviously. I should add, we reached out to the Attorney General's office, did not hear back in time for air. Nancy Gertner, former federal judge, now senior lecturer at Harvard Law at WBUR's legal analyst. Judge Gertner, thank you so much, as always, for the time.
Thank you.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.